the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 98 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses committed to innovation, service, and modern marketing become even more innovative. In this episode, I'm tremendously excited to speak with Lydia Lassler, the founder of Body Ice, who produce ice and heat packs for injury management. In addition to being a business owner, a mother of two young boys, a wife, a motivational speaker, Lydia is also a champion aerial freestyle skier who is currently in full training to compete at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, Korea, her fifth Olympic campaign. Now, Lydia won gold in aerial freestyle at the 2010 Vancouver Olympic Games, and she backed that up with a bronze medal at the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics, becoming the first woman to perform a quad-twisting triple somersault jump in competition at those Olympics. She's quite an amazing person, and I was really privileged to have her on the podcast. Now, of course, we did talk a lot about sport, but in particular about the lessons that Lydia took from her sporting career and applied in her business. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Lydia Lassala.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Lawn on the beautiful Great Ocean Road in Victoria, Lydia Lassler, who's the founder and CEO of Body Ice, who produce ice and heat packs for injury management. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Lydia. Lydia, it's a great privilege.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
As our guest. Now, for anyone that's even remotely interested in sport and particularly winter sport, they'll know that Lydia is a champion aerial freestyle skier. She's a four-time Winter Olympian. She's won the gold medal in aerial freestyle at the 2010 Vancouver Olympic Games and achieved bronze at the 2014 Sochi Games. Now, in those particular games, you became the first woman to perform, and I see if I get this right, a quad twisting triple somersault jump in competition. Is that right?
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was just amazing, actually.
Well done. Yeah. So now that you'd landed that jump for the first time on snow only days before, and that was the first time a woman's ever landed it.
Which is, yeah, and attempted it really. So that was
big
milestone.
Now, in addition to running your business and raising your family, Lydia's also currently in full training to compete at the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. So she's a very busy lady. She's also written a book titled The Will to Fly, which outlines her journey to date. And that book is going to be released the film of that book is going to be released in DVD form in December. Some people might have been lucky enough to see it as it did the rounds. Unfortunately, I've only read the book, but I'm looking forward to that DVD. So, Lydia, I know that from a very young age you wanted to be an Olympic champion, and you basically kept that passion burning all through until you achieved the goal. So I'm kind of intrigued as, you know, what prompted that goal?
I think I just fell in love with the Olympic movement at a young age, and I was about six when I first remember seeing my first Olympic Games, and it was the Seoul 1988 Olympics, and I'm just really mesmerised by, you know, the different sports and the athletes, and I think that whole notion of just being able to compete on an international stage, but also, you know, with the best of the best. So it just struck a chord early on, and I knew for certain that that was something that I was meant to do. You know, I was meant to be an athlete, and didn't really know in what sport as a six-year-old, but the sport kind of seemed to find me, and I don't think it would have mattered what sport. I started in gymnastics and transferred later into aerial skiing, and even still the passion is, you know, and the drive is to be able to get the best out of myself as an athlete and compete, you know, against the best of the best in the world's most watched, you know, international competition. So there's a lot of great things about being an athlete. We have some amazing opportunities, and I'm just really grateful for what I've had, you know, and the good times and the bad times have shaped me and who I am, and being an athlete has really taught me a lot about myself.
Hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating, and I refer people to the book The Will to Fly, because you can learn a lot more about Lydia's whole journey and how she maintained that passion. I want to explore today with you about how that translates into the business that you've started, which is something that was born out of a need that you saw for yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. I had a bit of a string of bad luck with injury, and to top it off, I ended up blowing my knee out twice in a matter of 6 months at the Torino Winter Olympics in 2006. So I was having a bit of a difficult time with my body throughout that phase of life, and I had to ice a lot, as you do when you have acute injuries and also surgery, and I couldn't really find a product that would work for me. It would stay in place. It would, you know, something that would stay cold enough and give me the compression, the level of compression that I wanted, and not leak and slip all over the place. Basically, something to replace the, you know, the awful frozen peas or just the bag of ice that's you know, you can't kind of adhere to your limbs. So I had a certain need, and I figured a lot of other people would as well, and wanted to kind of just fix a problem, really. I didn't really start out as, you know, I didn't really start out to, well, I want to create a business. I just really needed to fulfill my own kind of need and fix a problem for myself. So with some time away from skis and, you know, obviously through intense rehabilitation, I started designing and manufacturing a range of recovery ice packs that would fit on any limb and would stay secure, would stay cold enough and stay in place. And within about 6 months of I had body ice up and running, and my first client was my orthopedic surgeon who bought 500 off me off the bat. So that was a great start, because I found my market, but also knew that the product was needed by a lot of other people as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great story. You've found your market, and there's a lesson in that for all businesses is, what, you know, if you find your ideal market, then it makes things so much easier, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I had, you know, envisioned that I'd be selling to kind of the weekend warriors and athletes and sporting clubs, and it ended up not being so much that. Well, these days it's a mixture of lots of different, you know, markets, especially as it expanded into a kids' range and a women's range. But still our core market is, you know, orthopaedic surgeons that are dealing with orthopaedic injuries on various people, not just athletes, but we've got elderly and children and you know, everyone in between as well.
Mm. Now, I'm interested to, because I heard you speak about fear actually on an interview you did on TV about jumping off the end of that ramp. Mm. And, you know, obviously that's something that you need to deal with, and it was an interesting answer, but I'm kind of looking at what's the mindset behind dealing with fear, because in business, you know, it's a different fear, but the feeling, I guess, is the same, you know, and people often don't take action.
Yeah, and I think, you know, especially when we do have fear, we generate all kinds of emotions as well, and pictures in our head and of things that might or might not happen, you know, and kind of that whole notion of expecting the or envisioning the worst. And I think that happens, you know, when you're fearful, because, you know, in sport, for example, I'm afraid I, you know, may miss this jump and hurt myself and re-injure myself. I'm afraid I would miss a final so that I don't get to show the world what I'm capable of. I'm afraid I, you know, won't achieve, you know, what I think I can this year. So there's all kinds of, you know, if you have those kind of limiting beliefs, you start to generate images and pictures as well about what that might end up being. And I think that's where you can really then, if you have that kind of awareness about yourself, you can say, okay, right? You know, seeing myself performing that way that I don't want to, or I see myself getting injured, or I see my business failing in a way that I don't want it to. Let's just acknowledge that, but not judge it. But how do you turn it around, and what do you want out of your business, and what do you want out of yourself, rather than, you know, focusing on the worst case? Let's, how about we change the picture and focus on the best possible scenario, and, you know, whether it's that beautiful jump that I want to be able to do, and that healthy body that I want to have, and that great thriving business. So yeah, so I think a lot about is acknowledging that fear is present, but figuring out what to do with it, and changing the emotions that it generates by focusing on the positive picture.
That's great advice, and I like the limiting beliefs, because I'm thinking, you know, you've had some pretty serious setbacks there, and you know, hurt yourself, and missed some landings that resulted in serious injury. But then if you contrast that with the times you've actually landed that beautiful jump and felt really great about it, and it looked fantastic, and you didn't hurt yourself, and the result was awesome, that probably way outweighs that. So that if you remove the limiting beliefs, say, actually 99 times out of 100, it's a good result.
Yeah, and you just start focusing on what you do want to happen, rather than maybe what's happened in the past, or, you know, some images that you've been conjuring up that actually haven't even happened, you know, which is, you know, fear and uncertainty. So, yeah, it really is about having that awareness, though, that is actually happening and going on, and then stopping the process and changing the picture to suit you, and focus on forward, you know, projecting rather than backwards, I think is really important in anything, not just, you know, obviously not just in sport, but with any kind of limiting belief that you've got about yourself.
That's great advice. And I think it's a great analogy with sport, because a lot of people in business don't really see that. They don't see that they're placing limitations on themselves by imagining a scenario that might only happen 1% of the time, or maybe it's happened to them in the past, but 99% of the time they've actually achieved what it was they set out to achieve. And so, you know, the fear of taking risk, or not taking risk because of fear, becomes a real problem. It's not the fear or what might happen, it's the lack of taking the action.
Yeah, and complacency, and, you know, especially in sport, where I'm fortunate enough to see the consequences straight away. So if you've got limiting beliefs and you act on those, then chances are the worst case scenario is going to happen. And that could be, you know, that could have a significant consequence, like injury and really mucking yourself up. So in business, sometimes the consequences are a little less. They're financial consequences, you know, it's a failed project or campaign or whatever it might be, but your life's not kind of in danger, you know, or your body's not on the line.
But
you're not getting that fight or flight response that we're born with, and it's innate in us. So it's harder to gauge and easier to weasel out of.
Yeah. But at the same time, people do get so attached to it that it's almost, you know, particularly if it's overcoming some sort of fear. Like, I think of people doing public speaking, and they talk about public speaking being the, you know, next worst thing to death. And you say, well, really?
Yeah, well, exactly. Really? Would you rather die? Or how about we just, you know, focus on what you are going to say today, and perhaps the how you do want to present. Yeah, so it's, and I have that same, you know, fear of public speaking that most people have. You know, what if you stuff up? What if you forget what you're going to say? What if people don't resonate with you? What if they think you're boring? Blah, 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 blah. You know, you can really work yourself down into a hole. But instead, it's kind of, okay, acknowledging that that's just fear and uncertainty. How can we turn it around? What do I want to get across here? And just, you know, tell your story and tell it how it is, and with passion, and be genuine, and people will tend to respond.
Mm, Yeah, that's great. And I have heard you speak, so I'm in live and also on videos, so I think, you know...
Hopefully I wasn't boring.
No, you definitely weren't boring. You're quite inspirational, so I don't think you've got anything to worry about. Exactly. Now, the other thing I made a note of here is the, you know, all throughout your book and other things that I've read, you know, the ability to keep that goal in sight and to be so driven about that, which is something that I think in business could be enormously valuable, because I see so many people chase the next shiny object and they kind of forget about the big picture or the goal that they'd set themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think if it means enough to you and it's important enough, and I think, you know, for any goal, you've got to have your why, you know, and a strong why, a motivating factor on why you want to achieve it. And I think in sport, I am a lot better at the why, because it's something I've been doing for my whole life, and sport and being an athlete is my number one passion. Business is a second, probably, you know, so I often feel the same way. I don't, you know, resonate with numbers on a page, and I have to bring it back to, well, actually, why am I, you know, why am I in this business? And it really is that back to the core, and why I started is to help people recover from their injuries, and just that, you know, is motivating for me, and that's enough for me. It's not to hit a sales target. It's not to do that, but it's to spread, you know, my product so that I can help as many people as possible. And if you're doing that, then I figure if I'm doing that, that's the why, then you'll figure out how, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent advice. So keeping that why in mind. And also I like that, you know, you're really focused on who is it you're helping, because I had a call this morning and we were talking about sales, and it was very much about understanding who it is you're helping and what it is you're doing for them, what's the result of your work with them. So I think, you know, that's a very powerful why that you've expressed there. Now, the other thing that occurs to me, because you're so much more than an elite athlete and a business owner, you're also we talked about the book, and you're a speaker, and you're a wife, and you're a mother of two small boys. So the obvious question is, how do you find time to do all that?
Well, sometimes I don't, you know, and that's just the reality of it. I always often bite off more than I can chew, and have this long list at the start of the day. And, you know, there's days where I can't get anything crossed off it. And that's, you know, that's the whole juggling of parenthood and motherhood and the many hats that I do wear. And so, yeah, it's all about prioritising, making sure the family unit's looked after is a big priority. So we get help in there. We have an au pair that lives in with us to help lighten that load. And my husband works from home as well, which is really works out well for us, because we are, whilst we're working at home, we still are home and around the kids as much as possible. And that's what we value. And we love that, that it's given us that, you know, the lifestyle that we want, to be able to live here at the beach and enjoy that lifestyle too. But yeah, it is about kind of compartmentalising the different facets of life, you know, me the athlete, me the mum, the mother, the wife and the business owner. And so when I have a training camp, I had last week down in Melbourne, and some trampoline training, and just had to go away for 2 days and do that, and made sure everything else was looked after, you know, on the business end and on the home front. Come back home, play mum for a bit, you know, and make sure I'm kind of connected and 100% towards that. And, you know, so you just have to kind of, I like to be able to just compartmentalise, chunk things down, put them in their boxes and focus on one thing at a time, because if I try to do everything at once, nothing ends up working very well and I don't do anything well. So it's picking things off one at a time is just how I kind of able to function really and get things done. And they always say, if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, my kids' piano teacher, when they were learning piano, you know, they would, at a very young age, they would memorize these hugely long, complex piano concertos and be able to perform them. And I was always fascinated and thought, how can you remember all that? Mm-hmm. And her advice was always, you treat it like pizza, one piece at a time. And
yes.
And so yep. I remember that. So I think the compartmentalizing Absolutely. Is great advice, and particularly, I mean, in two manners. So, I mean, a lot of people have a business and have a family and try to find the balance there. So that's a great strategy for doing that. But also in business, we have many different roles. So I think the compartmentalization strategy works really well there as well.
Yeah, and just being able to segment things, break it down so that you can just do one thing at a time and try and do it well, so you don't have to redo it or find a different solution for it later.
Mm. All right. Now, as I said at the beginning, you're in training for Sochi in March, I think it is, right?
Oh, we've got South Korea. So Sochi was 2014.
Oh, sorry. Pyeongchang.
Yeah. So they're in February, mid-Feb. So
they're
in full swing at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's your objective there?
Well, it's interesting. I'm, heading into my fifth Winter Olympics, and I think every Olympic experience has been quite different and coming in with a different set of goals. And I'm in a position I wouldn't compete unless I knew I was still competitive. Mm. So I feel like I still am, which is great, but I'm also scaling back. I'm not doing, the quad twisting triple somersault that I did 4 years ago. I'm scaling back to double somersault, something a bit safer. A bit more consistent with as I kind of wean myself out of sport. I think that's a really important part of the athlete cycle is, so much effort is putting into bringing athletes through and up and to their pinnacle, and I think it's just important to transition out and find a kind of a way to do that. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment. It'll be my final Olympics and hoping for, really solid result back and drawing on a lot of past experiences. I haven't been training as much as I would have in the past. It's been interesting, just doing a lot less there and probably more focus on business. But now as I approach into the winter season, probably putting the business on the back burner and with a solid team in place to make sure things are done when I'm away, and focusing more on the athlete mode as February approaches. So, hoping for a top three result is definitely realistic, and that's what I'll be aiming for sure.
Mm. Yeah, and for those people that haven't yet read the book, I mean, there's a really fascinating account there of the Sochi Olympics when you were the defending champion and you weren't satisfied with just going out and doing a safe jump to perhaps secure a gold medal. You were really pushing the boundaries, so you always wanted to push yourself to do more and be better than what anybody else was, so not just do enough.
I'm glad I did that, otherwise I probably would have regretted it for sure. So everything is as it should be.
Mm, that's right. And it's for me, that's the sign of a true leader. Push the boundaries, push the limits, and, don't play safe, which I think you've clearly demonstrated there. And it sounds like you're translating that into business now.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you can have those fears, but not fear of – I don't have fear of failure so much if I've put everything into it, and I think you have to be honest with yourself there. I think everyone knows, have you done the work, have you not? It's a yes or no answer.
Mm.
And so that's all you can do, and then that way you can go in and whatever the result, you've got no regrets, only experience and something to learn from. And for me, something I'm very proud of, because I, as I said, am scaling back in my degree of difficulty. I'm 4 years a bit older. I've had less training, so it would be really risky but reckless for me to go and expect to do quad twisting triple somersaults at the next Olympics. There's a difference between taking risks and being reckless, and do you know what I mean? So, so I am glad that I took the calculated risk I did 4 years ago, because if I hadn't have done that trick, I would have regretted it, because I'm not in a position to do it now.
Well, there's definitely a good message there also about the difference between, you know, taking risks and being reckless. And it comes back, I guess, in some ways, in keeping that goal in sight, because I think, if I remember correctly, in the book you saw someone, you saw the guys jumping that particular jump, and you decided, I want to do that.
Yeah, when I first started the sport, I, you know, saw the gap between male and female aerial skiers, and I couldn't really understand it, and my goal was to close it, you know, and big part of that was to do this quad twisting triple somersault, because that hadn't been done, and breaking boundaries for myself, definitely stretching my capabilities as much as I could, but also for the sport and for other women coming up through the system.
Now, I'm intrigued with the mindset around, I mean, you've clearly very driven to achieve the goals that you set yourself, but then the mindset around addressing fears and recognizing limiting beliefs and putting them in the right place. In other words, not letting them get in the way, keeping that goal in sight. And how do you achieve that? I mean, is that something you've worked on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not something you know, it just comes to you. Definitely not. I worked really hard on the mental side of things, on mental training. I engaged a mental coach, you know, and did very intense work with him. And a lot of that was discovering my limiting beliefs. You know, some of these things you're really unaware of that you've been doing, and they might have just become a habit over a long period of time. And so one is having the awareness that they're there, and two, then it's about breaking them down and changing that belief to something that's going to suit you better and that is actually more real and in line with what you want out of yourself. So it's amazing how these limiting beliefs can hold us back. And, you know, it's just as simple as, you know, oh, I always slice on, you know, my golf swing or tennis swing or whatever it is. And you know, do you really, do you always, you know, slice, or have you just had that problem temporarily or lately, you know? So you have to be careful with how you explain things about yourself and your own explanatory style, and it's only through training and awareness that you can actually pick up on that and go, right, I've just been having, you know, this certain thought, or I've been talking this way about myself. Inner dialogue, you know, is constantly chattering, so you have to be careful what you say to yourself as well and how you explain certain situations to yourself, because that then dictates how you respond and then how your next behaviour. So it takes really a lot of training, and you know, I would say in my sport, and I've discovered over the years how important obviously the mental aspect is to being an athlete, but also a person, because your thoughts, you know, precede all your behaviours, and which can turn then into routines and habits. So by breaking it down and starting with your thoughts and having that awareness of what you want to be thinking on a daily basis is really important, but it takes hard work, and a lot of people don't put as much work into their mental aspect of themselves until perhaps they have a problem, whereas I think that's quite wrong. Just as we train our body, you know, in the gym, or we go for a walk to feel those nice endorphins, we should pay as much attention on our minds as well.
That's great advice, and I like what you said, that it's not just about sport. I mean, you see some sports people or sporting teams that are down on form, and so they lack confidence, and it kind of is a spiral in that case, if you know, if they can't kind of get over that lack of confidence and the belief that you know, we're out of form, or we can't do X, Y, Z, or we always slice our golf shot, then it kind of never really improves. So, but like you said, you know, often the beliefs are deeper and you're not aware of them, and also it applies all across life. So I love what you said there, So you're working on that in the business as well? You're taking that analogy into the business?
Yeah, in ways. I think, you know, it's really important to have a really clear picture of where you want the business to go and what you want it to do. And I think it's still evolving for me as I transition out of, you know, being an athlete to more of a business person. And I think once I finally retire from being the athlete, I can then actually start devising and creating sharper and clearer goals in business, and just in the same way as I do as in sport. So, and I have already in it, and it works. You know, it's not rocket science. It really does work. And so then for me, it's about how do I then, you know, bring that to my team and get them on board them that way and help them find that process as well. Which is really important if you're managing and employing a team of people to work for you on your business. You want them aligned with you as well.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and inspiring them and painting the picture of your goals and helping them to be the best they can be, I think is really good in business, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure you've got a lot of lessons from sport where you can do that.
Yeah, right. Just experience. Yeah, experience and finding out what has worked and what hasn't worked. Do you know what I mean? And and just using those experiences that's gained along the way.
Okay. Now I know you're on a schedule, so I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, to with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions that hopefully you'll give us some inspiration with. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think travel and experiencing other cultures and products has been the best for me. I think, you know, even with building a house and living in different houses all over the world, I've been able to bring that back to our own house and say, well, this works there and this is really clever, that, you know, way of structurally building a certain piece of your home and what's more efficient. So I think get out there and explore and, you know, if you don't have an innovative idea, I'm sure you'll find one along your travels.
That's great advice, really, because, I mean, I've travelled quite a bit and, yeah, you're right. You see things and you're, oh, wow, what do they do
that
way?
Why don't we do that here?
Yeah, why don't we do that here? Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I think all of my products that I've developed for Body Ice have come out of a certain need that I've had for myself. So initially, you know, Body Ice Recovery was the first range that I created, which came out of, you know, the inability to find a suitable ice pack for my own, you know, bung knee. So I'm like, well, let's try and create ones for all the joints of the body so that people can ice easily and efficiently. So that was one out of my own, you know, adversity, being injured, that came out of a need that I had for myself. And then later on, after, you know, I became a mum, it was the same thing with childbirth, and I'm not going to go to those details, but not having the same kind of recovery tools that you need after childbirth, because it is quite a traumatic, you know, can be traumatic experience and hard on your body. So that's where Body Ice, you know, the inspiration for Body Ice Woman was there. I'm like, surely you can do something better for our new mums out there. So that was the inspiration there. And then as my first child, Kai, became, you know, a toddler and bumping and bruising himself and that need for instant comfort, you know, I realised, oh, gosh, there's a real market for kids. There's no really unthreatening kind of ice packs for kids and warm packs for kids that they're not scared of and that they can just put on their boo-boo straight away. And it's kind of that, you know, that that band-aid effect, well, you know, something to help them. And it's true, you know, so with our kids' range, it has had that instant kind of comfort. You know, our kids run to the freezer and get the ice pack out and they sit there and you know, so it's kind of, yeah, all these little experiences along the way have really shaped, you know, the next product in the body ice range. So, and I think, you know, yeah, again, travel and has been inspiration towards, you know, other products. And my husband runs an IT company and he's from Finland, so, you know, they've been very innovative in the digital marketing space for a long time, and it's about applying, you know, to bringing some of those technologies here to Australia that we're not doing and applying them for our market. So, yeah, again, your own experiences, your own needs, I think are a really great way to find a product and again, experiencing other cultures. Yeah.
I love that that story about how you develop those products, and also, you know, to me, there's a really high level of self-awareness and awareness of what's happening around you there, isn't there? Because you're saying, okay, you're seeing things in your travels, you're seeing needs in your personal life and turning those into opportunities, rather than, you know, when you had that serious injury that started it all, you could have kind of felt sorry for yourself and sulked in the corner or whatever, but you didn't.
No, yeah, and it was a problem, but, you know, it was about finding a solution, not digging yourself down into a deeper hole.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's your favourite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Probably favorite tool or system. I think just simplifying my processes has been, you know, amazing, whether it's, you know, over the last 10 years moving to different software and CRM tools and social media platform tools and measuring tools and reporting tools. I think finding the right one that fits your business so that you can just go to one place and get the analytics that you need really saves a lot of time, even, you know, reporting your financials, and whether it's you using Xero or MyOrb or whatever it is, and being able to then analyse your numbers and use those great, that, you know, the great software that's available today is just simplified and made processes more streamlined. So I think whether it's a, you know, shipping integration and things like that, and always looking for the next thing as well, the next new piece of software that can just help streamline your processes better. I think just always being on the lookout for those and using them.
All right, that's great. I mean, there's so much happening in that on that front, and also there still is this need for, as you say, having kind of the central place where you can see everything.
Does everything, yep.
All right. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
Deadlines and timelines, I think. Certainly you have your milestone goals along the way, certain targets that you need to hit, or little goals that to ultimately reach your main goal, and then we can have all that set out, but I think it's really important to have the timeline in place so that you know when you're supposed to hit each certain milestone. I think things without a time reference, you know, never get done.
Okay, that's good. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Well, I think every business is unique. Find, you know, study your competitors, and you can pick and take what you like from them and perhaps find a hole that they're not kind of filling. So, I think that's probably the best way to differentiate yourself is to do something that your competitors aren't doing.
Yeah, that's good advice. And find a need that's not being filled, which essentially has been your strategy, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right, so I like to ask my guests what the future is for their business. So what's the future for Body Ice, and what's the future for you? So we know, you know, you're headed to the Olympics again, but...
Probably, looking towards retirement from sport, which is sad, but it also I'm at a point where I'm ready now, and I'm excited
That's
for that
competitive
transition.
sport, right?
Yep. And you know, spending more time surfing, which is something that I'd really love to do as well. So, enjoying the lifestyle down here at on the Great Ocean Road, and for business, yeah, just keep taking body ice to new levels. I think the online space is a space that we can really expand in and generate more sales in, and on a global scale as well. You know, just having a scalable business that you can take to different markets and test them there and see if we can make them work, I think is our next step.
Mm. Well, you've got good IT support, I take it.
So, yep.
and it's amazing what you can do these days, isn't it, with the internet?
Yeah. And just figuring out, you know, logistics and of things and distributors in other countries, and yeah, so I think there's lots to be done. There always is, and it's just a matter of ticking one box off at a time, I think, not trying to do everything at once and see how we go.
And of course, we did mention at the beginning, but your film The Will to Fly, the documentary, is coming out on DVD in December, right?
Yeah, December 1 on DVD and iTunes release. It's available for pre-orders now on the willtoflyfilm.com. So that had a theatrical release, a cinema release in 2016, and now we're heading, yeah, towards DVD leading into the next Winter Olympics, which is great.
So it would be a nice Christmas gift for all our listeners. So
yes.
Do yourself a favour and get that, because it should be great, judging by the book. Yeah. And you can also see some trailers of it on YouTube.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and in their field?
Find your market. In your niche market, it might be a niche market, or just be certain of who you're going to be selling to, who's going to be needing and purchasing your products, is a really important key. I stumbled across mine and when I first began, so I had a little bit of beginner's luck, but I think you eventually figure these things out and make sure you service them the best way, and always keep a lookout on how you can improve. I think, you know, you can get quite complacent on if you're finding a product that works and then all of a sudden a competitor comes in and makes it that little bit better and you're kind of caught on the back foot. So I think always study your competitors and ask your question on how we can improve, how can we make this better.
Great advice. I think, you know, finding a niche market and really focusing narrow on that and obsessing over them, as Seth Godin puts it, is such a powerful way to differentiate yourself and to get really clear on who it is you can help. So it's great advice.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Lydia. This has been really fantastic. Now, where can people reach out and say thank you? Apart from buying a DVD.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter as well, so feel free to reach out and say hi. And, yeah, I've got to think of a new website launching soon as well, lydialassala.com.au. It needed a bit of a revamp, so it's coming out probably this month, actually.
All right. Well, we'll post links to all of that in the show notes to the episode, and hopefully we'll get a lot of people wishing you well at the Olympics leading up to that. I think that's something that I believe is always great to have as an athlete.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a nice lift.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, so Jürgen.
Finally then, who would you like me to interview on a future Nova Buzz podcast and why?
I think I'd be interested to hear Michael Klim's story on milk. He's had a, you know, also an athlete that retired from sport and went straight into developing his own business and a very successful one at that. So I think he'd be a great candidate.
All right. Well, maybe you can give us an introduction. So, Michael, if you're listening, we'll come and get you courtesy of Lydia.
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today, Lydia. I've really enjoyed this, and we did have a few technical glitches to start with, mainly of my doing in PowerCorp, the local power company, but we managed
things
to get
out of our control.
Yeah, we managed to get there. We managed to make it happen. Didn't allow that to limit us. This has been fabulous, as I say. I was really inspired by your story in The Will to Fly, and I definitely encourage people to read the book, watch the DVD when it comes out. I wish you all the best for the future and for body ice, and of course for the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you very much, Egan. Thank you. It's been great to chat.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Lydia as much as I enjoyed this interview. She's a very inspiring lady and shared some really valuable information with us. All those ideas and tips that Lydia spoke about can be found at innovabiz.com.au/bodyice. That is BODYICE. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/bodyice. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Lydia there, as well as information to purchase the book and the DVD of the film The Will to Fly. That's well worth reading, and I'm tremendously excited to get my DVD because I haven't personally seen the film yet, but I have read the book, and the film, I'm sure, will be fabulous. Now, we'd love to hear your biggest takeaway from this episode in the comments section of the blog post. Lydia suggested that I interview Michael Klim, another Olympic champion and founder of Milk & Co., on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Michael, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Lydia Lassala. If you haven't already done so, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll never miss a future episode. If you haven't left us a review yet, get on to it. Seriously, we always welcome feedback, and reviews let us know how we're doing. If there's anything you'd like us to cover or questions you want answered on a future InnovaBuzz podcast or guests you'd like us to interview, please send those ideas to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.